Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Consider the subtleness of the sea. How its most dreaded creatures glide under water, unapparent for the most part, and treacherously hidden beneath the loveliest tints of azure. Consider once more the universal cannibalism of the sea, all whose creatures prey upon each other, carrying on eternal war since the world began.
That is Benedict Cumberbatch for the Moby Dick Big Read Project, featuring celebrated actors and everyday people reading Herman Melville's classic aloud. The writer and cultural historian Philip Hoare curated that project and is here to consider a less subtle topic, the carbon-absorbing benefits of whale feces. After nearly reaching extinction in the 20th century, great whales are rebounding. A global team of researchers at the University of Vermont report that the continued recovery of whales has a powerful effect on ocean ecosystems and could even help reverse the effects of climate change. Philip is passionate about whales. We found that out when we spoke with him about his recent book, The Sea Inside. More recently, he wrote about the potential for whale poo to reverse the effects of climate change for The Guardian. Philip, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
It's lovely to be back on the show.
So it is hard to imagine that an increase in waste material from a creature would help our climate woes. We think of methane from cow manure, for example, actually contributing to greenhouse gases. What is it about whale poo?
It's a very basic thing, Virginia. You think of your garden, grows on manure, cow poo, well, whale poo does the same, only it's actually fertilising the phytoplankton, which are the microscopic and not so microscopic plants in the ocean. And I can tell you this on first-hand evidence. I have been at the wrong end of a whale when he decided, or she, I think it was actually, decided to do its business. And it's not solid. It's very cloudy. It's like a sort of cloud of brown, very smelly stuff. So in the food chain, you know, the food chain where the phytoplankton feed the zooplankton are what the sand eels are feeding on. You and I were talking about the whales off Cape Cod at the moment. A lot of whales out there feeding like crazy. I mean, they are eating a ton of sand eels a day.
So that makes sense. I can imagine the whole food chain going up to the whale and turning back around in this kind of ocean ecosystem. But what difference does that make for the atmosphere at large outside of the ocean?
Because as with trees, as with plants on the ground, plants, phytoplankton fix, they actually draw down carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. At the same time, of course, then they give out oxygen, the oxygen we breathe. 50%, some people say 60% of the oxygen we breathe comes from phytoplankton. If you imagine the huge surface of the ocean, the world is covered by ocean. I mean, two-thirds of the planet's surface is ocean. That's in a tremendous amount of oxygen being given out, carbon dioxide being taken in. In fact, one of the reasons why climate change isn't accelerating in extraordinary ways that it might be is because the oceans have become a carbon sink. Actually, they are sequestering, they are drawing in carbon dioxide and actually protecting us.
Well, one of the big pieces of news about this University of Vermont study and report is that whale populations are recovering and rebounding since, what, near extinction, I guess, in the 20th century. So is there any correlation between growth in greenhouse gases in the 20th century and the decline of whale population? Could they have made that much of a difference, I guess, is the question.
Who knows? We can't call that now. But the idea is that there were hundreds of thousands of whales taken out of the out of this chain in the 20th century especially. I mean, it's quite ironic. If you look at the period of Yankee whaling, which was at its height in the late 18th and early 19th century, killed not really very many whales. Most whales died, actually, within my lifetime in 1966, more whales were killed than the entire 150 years of the peak of Yankee whaling, of the Moby Dick period, if you will.
Wow.
So there were hundreds of thousands. I mean, we think now 300,000 blue whales were taken in the 20th century. We know that the population of sperm whales was 1.2, maybe 1.5 million before hunting began. It was reduced down to 300,000, maybe even fewer. Now, we know those figures are now creeping up. There is a perceptible advance in the numbers. We know that off the east coast of Australia at the moment, they're having 10% more humpback whale calves are coming back to that coastline each year. So this is a good news story. We need to really shout about it because we can give ourselves a pat on the back. We don't do a lot of brilliant things sometimes to the environment, but this is one thing we've really done well, actually. And it's partly because, you know, that that moratorium on whaling is observed by pretty much every nation in the world. We know there are exceptions. We know that Japan, Norway and other smaller nations do still hunt whales, but generally it's observed by everyone. And it is a good news story.
Philip, there are varying different reports on how quickly we will approach this point of not being able to turn back the irreversible damage done to the planet. Given that, you know, and given that we don't yet know the effect of whale poop, among other natural combatants to climate change, do we have time to think about that rather than these geoengineering projects that have been proposed, you know, putting mirrors up in the sky, seeding clouds, other kinds of proposals that are a bit more radical than waiting for the natural process?
Well, sure. And the geoengineering projects are pretty sci-fi stuff. I mean, as you say, you know, they're creating artificial volcanoes to spew sulfur into the air and create a kind of shield against the sun's rays, enormous mirrors to deflect the sun's rays erected in outer space. To me, they're just a bit macho, to be honest. You know, it's really within the capability of all of us to change our behaviour in a way, and not to rely on science to dig us out of the hole, really. You know, the problem is that a lot of people are sceptical about what science is saying about climate change. So, you know, it's an uphill struggle sometimes. But I think this whale story is a really important aspect of the way we have to look positively and optimistically about what can be done and about the way nature itself can really conquer what we've done. And a lot of the scientists are saying that, you know, if we adhere to some of the restrictions on carbon emissions, that we can roll back. We can roll back what seems to be an inevitable process.
Well, until then, we rely on whale poo. Philip Hoare, I want to thank you so much. Great to speak with you again.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much, Virginia.
Philip Hoare is a writer and a cultural historian. You'll find a link to his article for The Guardian, Why Whale Poo Could Be the Secret to Reversing the Effects of Climate Change, as well as our earlier conversation about his book, The Sea Inside, at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.